Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Lessons in the legend that are told.
The Iroquois, a song from Oneida, singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah. Akwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radios, honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices on Radio for Peace International. RFPI is truly global community radio. We began our program today specifically with that song by Joanne Shenandoah, in order to introduce you to a situation facing a traditional Oneida Nation community in New York. Their traditional name, Onyota-Aka, more commonly known as the Oneidas, are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, sometimes called the Iroquois. The Haudenosaunee consists of the Mohawk, Oneidas, Onondagas, Cayugas, Senecas, and Tuscaroras. One also hears the Confederacy called the Six Nations. This is a case of traditional Oneida defending cultural life ways. Today's focus reflects back to our earlier Wolf Mountain radio coverage in 1995 when we reported on the traditional Oneida's March for Democracy. Many of our listeners may recall when about 150 Oneida people went on a March for Democracy to oppose the decisions being made in secret by the so-called Bureau of Indian Affairs supported Men's Council under the control of so-called tribal chairman Arthur Raymond Halbritter, especially Halbritter's casino deal with former New York Governor Cuomo in 1993. Sadly, it seems trouble still continues in the Onyota-Aka, the traditional Oneida Nation, people of the Standing Stone. In today's program, along with more music from Joanne, we will share some news about an Oneida Nation police incident that happened to Joanne Shenandoah's mom, my dear friend 69-year-old Claire mother, Macy, and her daughter Danielle Patterson. Both of them were recently violently assaulted at their home by tribal police. We will also provide a brief history of the Onyota-Aka by Haudenosaunee scholar Doug George Caniento, as well as more information about the Oneidas for Democracy and ways our listeners may help the traditionals struggling to hold on for future generations. Before we discuss this situation any further, we shall listen to another song by Joanne entitled Messenger.
Thank you.
Call I received the other day from an Abenaki Indian friend of mine, Mr. Lone Wolf. He had just returned from Oneida Nation territory in what's now called New York State to his adjacent tribal nation territory, Nadakina, now called the state of Vermont. Mr. Lone Wolf was invited by traditional Wolf Clan Oneidas to serve as an observer in order to witness the state of relations between the traditional Onyota-Aka and the so-called tribal government men's council and tribal chairman Hal Britter. Mr. Lone Wolf reported to me that sadly there seems to be serious violations of traditional indigenous law as well as harassment by the U.S.-supported tribal government towards those Oneidas that question Hal Britter's tribal administration. One particular recent incident this past November involving the Oneida Tribal Police was quite disturbing and seems to exemplify the abusive manner of the tribal government towards its traditional citizens. November 16, 2001, Danielle Patterson, a mother of three children ages 7, 9, and 10, was forcibly and violently removed from her home by by seven strong-armed Oneida police in full view of her frightened children. This action by the police caused serious neck and back injuries, severe bruising on her body, as well as emotional trauma to her and her young children. To make matters worse, the Oneida police also hurt Danielle's mother, grandmother Macy Shenandoah, when they assaulted her and aggressively pulled her off the porch of the house. Macy Shenandoah is a well-respected Wolf Clan mother. I have had the privilege to know her for many, many years. I know her to be a person of honesty, integrity, sincerity, with a good spirit heart for our native ways. After Mr. Lone Wolf's conversation, I telephoned the house of Clan Mother Shenandoah to express my sadness over this recent tribal government police action and to inquire what we at Yad Kiddushi Native Center might do to help out. Their request was for us to publicize this situation through our Wolf Mountain radio. They hope my Radio for Peace International broadcast will encourage listeners to help them continue to defend their traditional Onyonta Aka. Later, in Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, following the historical summary and information about their native organization, Oneidas for Democracy, we will share contact information for ways people can help the traditional Oneida who are holding on for future generations. This serious situation of a seemingly dictatorial tribal government disrespecting indigenous law for the sake of greed and power is not just an issue between different factions of Oneidas. It is a situation which affects all Native nations. It is a situation which should be considered terrible by all people throughout the world who care for justice and human rights. It is an example of colonialism. It illustrates how Washington and Ottawa, for many, many years, have supported financially and politically tribal governments who often have no regard or support of their traditional citizens. Tragically, there are many previous examples of this in Indian country. The Lakota with Richard Dick Wilson, the Apache with Wendell Chino, the Big Mountain Black Mesa Dene with Peter McDonald, to name just a few. We hope this program will stir you enough to find out for yourselves just what is going on in Indian country, just what is the Bureau of Indian Affairs really up to. While the focus of today's program is specifically about the Oneidas in New York, one should keep in mind about the many energy and natural resource wars that are being waged throughout the world in Native communities and how governments control indigenous lands and peoples with their so-called tribal authorities. The justification for tribal police action against Macy and her daughter Danielle seems to stem from tribal chairman Hal Britter's retaliation against those who called for his removal from office and for those who took part in the 1995 March for Democracy. The march was a protest by traditional Oneidas that were concerned over the way their tribe was being run, especially the Turning Stone Casino issue. It is also important to point out that the Grand Council of the Haudenosaunee stripped Hal Britter as an Oneida spokesperson after he created an organization called the Men's Council and took power over Oneida affairs without the approval of the Oneida people. This was condemned by the Grand Council. Hal Britter responded by stripping the traditional people of their Oneida citizenship. This, of course, meant a loss of all the rights and privileges of being an Oneida. Loss of employment, health insurance, housing, educational allowances, financial stipends, and all other benefits and services of being a tribal member resulted from this BIA-supported tribal chairman's authority. One of the most severe actions against the Oneida Aka, the traditional community, has been the tribal government forcible entries into tribal members' home under a so-called beautification program, wherein the inspection results in removal of families and condemnation of the home. Many traditional families, unfortunately, have suffered from this. This was the threat of the incident where Oneida Tribal Police assaulted Danielle Peterson and Macy Shenandoah this past November 2001. My telephone conversation at the Shenandoah residence informed me that on Thanksgiving Eve, November 21st, 2001, just a few days after the tribal police assault on Danielle and Macy, Oneida Nation Commissioner for Public Safety, Arthur F. Pierce, ordered the demolition of Danielle Patterson's home, despite the fact that the resident was up to compliance with Madison County Regional Housing Codes. At least 11 other homes in the Oneida community have likewise been destroyed. The so-called problem, which Oneida Tribal Prosecutor Peter Common has reportedly justified the tribal government action in this matter, was that Danielle's home heating furnace wasn't working and therefore was not a fit home for her family. It is important to note that Ms. Patterson had already arranged with a local contractor to replace the furnace, but that the tribal government had ordered the heating contractor not to install the furnace. In addition, Tribal Public Safety Commissioner Pierce had threatened to take Danielle's children away from her since her home did not allegedly have enough heat. So it seems the assault on Danielle and Macy and the demolition of Danielle's home under the disguise of a housing inspection was really another act of intimidation and harassment towards the traditional Oneida community, whose political views differ from Tribal Chairman Hal Britter. They are really under duress from Tribal Chairman Hal Britter and his men's council. It has been reported that the Oneida Tribal Judge, Mr. Hancock, has ruled that the Oneida Tribe was acting legally in this matter. Small wonder that the Tribal Court is a department of Hal Britter's tribal government. While on the subject of tribal judiciary, let me read you a commentary on the Oneida Nation legal system. This is a one-page statement from the Oneidas for Democracy organization entitled Tribal Court, Oneida Nation Legal System. All ordinances and legal code have been constructed by Oneida Nation attorneys in secrecy and are changed at will. No territory resident has ever been given copies of these ordinances. There is no public disclosure until the Oneida Nation Police issue tickets or serve summonses for their alleged violation. None of the lawyers who draft these rules are Haudenosaunee or have any working knowledge of Oneida traditions. The members of the Men's Council are expressly exempt from the Oneida Nation statutes. They cannot be prosecuted in the Oneida Nation Court for criminal behavior. In addition, they have full access to the Oneida Nation lawyers and have been offered blanket protection under the guise of Oneida sovereign immunity. The next paragraph is entitled The Indian Civil Rights Act. Indian Civil Rights Act 25 U.S.C. Section 130, 8, 1994 makes due process requirements application to Native American nations, quote, no Indian tribe in exercising powers of self-government shall deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of its laws or deprive any person of liberty or property without due process of law, unquote. This statute applies to the Men's Council because it is not a Haudenosaunee government and is therefore excluded for protection under the 1794 Treaty of Canandaigua.
Many years ago, in a land so free, freer than we know it today, the buffalo ran free and the eagle soared up high. The mountains spoke of majesty. Now the land before us seems much more to us than ever before. People you'll be better off all the lies that you could live. Here's the pen, here's the X. Put your name on the line. Don't worry about the fine print beside me. Many years ago, in a land so free, freer than we know it today, well, the buffalo ran free, and the eagle soared so high, and the mountains spoke of majesty.
Please sign here, a beautiful and important song from Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah. And that song, for me, represents all the many treaties our sovereign, separate Indian nations signed with the governments of Washington and Ottawa that have been violated in their theft and desecration of our sacred lands. Earlier in the broadcast, I mentioned that I was going to share a history of the Oneida Aka, the Oneida people. This is a historical journey by Doug George Kanyento, a Haudenosaunee scholar. And in his narrative, Doug George uses the word Iroquois, so I will read that term, although I prefer to use what is the indigenous name for the Confederacy, the Haudenosaunee. Anyway, this is entitled Historical Journey by Doug George Kanyento. For the past few years, the Oneida Aka, people of the Standing Stone, or Oneidas of Madison County, have played an increasingly large role in the economic affairs of central New York. While much has been reported about the Oneidas in the newspapers, the following information should give readers a better understanding of the Oneidas. We are told the Oneidas were part of a larger Iroquois family which originated in the American Southwest thousands of years ago. The migration to the Northeast took many hundreds of years to complete, but ended when the Iroquois entered present-day New York at the confluence of the Oswego River and Lake Ontario. From there, the Iroquois separated into six distinct groups settling throughout the region. The Mohawks created a homeland along the Mohawk Valley, followed east to west by the Oneidas, Onondagas, Cayugas, and Senecas. The sixth group journeyed far to the south, finally ending up in the North Carolina area. These were the Tuscaroras, a native nation which retraced its steps to their ancient homelands in the year 1712 after losing a bitter war with English colonists. Oneidas refer to themselves as the Standing Stone because they had in each of their villages a large rock they would gather around to hold their ceremonial activities. The Mohawks are referred to as people of the Flint. The Onondagas are people of the hills. The Cayugas are people of the swamp. The Senecas call themselves people of the Great Hill. And the Tuscaroras are the shirt-wearing people. Originally, the Oneidas lived in an area which stretched from St. Lawrence River to northern Pennsylvania, and from the Chenango Creek Tihanga River on the west to the Unadilla River West Canada Creek on the east. Total area for the Aboriginal homeland of the United Nations is estimated to be about 3,600,000 acres. Oneida life in pre-European times was centered around their villages. They were primarily agricultural, with crops such as corn, beans, and squash forming the greater part of their diet. They enjoyed a rich spiritual life with a major ceremonial gathering during each lunar month. Clans were essential to the orderly flow of Oneida culture. All social, political, and religious functions were dependent upon the clans, as was the distribution of material goods. There were three clans, Bear, Wolf, and Turtle. Each clan appointed three female leaders, clan mothers, and three male leaders, or chiefs, to the national government. Also, each clan selected a man and a woman to serve as advisors on spiritual matters. These were and are the faith keepers. All leaders were nominated by the clan mothers and were subject to ratification by their respective clan. They served for life unless impeached by their clans for such violations as insanity, greed, assault, rape, treason, and incompetence, among others. The clan might also indicate that they have no confidence in a leader, or he or she might, by their own actions, commit crimes which violate their oath of office, thereby removing themselves from office. With regards to a chief or rotan, his clan mother would give him three cautions to rectify his behavior. At the third such warning, she was accompanied by a young man who would, upon her instructions, remove the chief's deer antler headdress, which was his symbol of office. Once removed, such a person was considered as walking dead, without voice in the people's affairs, were ever to be entrusted with any type of influence or power. They might also be banished from Iroquois territory, either permanently or for a set period of time. In order to function as a qualified leader, the candidate had to have a secure and stable home life, a solid marriage, be willing to accept the criticisms of the people. His skin was to be 7 spans thick, live simply and without the thought of personal enrichment, have considerable knowledge as to the traditional spiritual values of the community, and be an active participant in all the ancient rituals. When selected as a candidate by the clan, the prospective leader had to be endorsed by the Oneida National Government, then by the Grand Council of the Haudenosaunee Iroquois Confederacy, at a ceremonial called condolence, which the council might elect not to do if they disapproved of the candidacy, thereby sending the entire process back to the respective nation for a repeat of the selection process. For many generations, the Oneidas prospered in their ancestral lands, but with the arrival of the colonists in the Northeast, they endured considerable cultural stress. Devastating epidemics of European-born smallpox and influenza killed hundreds of thousands of native people in the East, and the Iroquois suffered periodic plagues resulting in displacement, disorganization, and chaos. In the 1600s, the Iroquois ended a century of warfare as the native nations in the Northeast fought to reestablish political and economic power. The Confederacy engaged in brutal struggles with the Erie's, Susquehannas, Algonquins, Crees, Chippewas, Illinois, Hurons, Mohicans, Abnakis, and others until a general peace was secured in 1701. Also enveloped in this war were Dutch, English, and French settlers who, in some instances, adopted a policy of playing one native nation against the other as the Europeans sought to expand their seacoast land base. The Oneidas were quick to adopt the new technologies brought to the region from across the sea. Firearms, tools, and ornaments found a ready market in Oneida as the natives brought their furs for exchange to markets in Montreal and Albany. The Iroquois derived great political power by controlling the fur trade along with material prosperity. But the Oneidas were feeling the pressure of expanding European settlement. They watched with growing alarm as the Mohawks were driven north to the St. Lawrence River to escape the colonists. Likewise, small groups of Oneidas also went north but to seek easier access to the Catholic Church, since many of them had converted to Christianity. Oneidas settled across the river from Montreal in 1660, and in the 1730s established a community called Oswegatchie near present-day Ogdenburg, New York. During the American Revolution, the Oneidas desired neutrality but were drawn into the conflict when their homelands were invaded by both American and British forces. In addition, the Reverend Samuel Kirkland was an influential advocate for the rebels and used his authority to divide the Oneidas, many of whom actively fought for the U.S. After the war, the Oneidas believed they would, because of their loyalty, have their land secured, but New York State adopted a policy of alienating Iroquois land by intimidation, threats, bribery, and outright fraud. Through a series of highly controversial and illegal transactions, New York assumed control over most of Oneida territory, resulting in the displacement of the Oneida people. When U.S. President Thomas Jefferson sought to remove all natives west of the Mississippi, the Oneidas felt they had no choice but to secure their survival by finding refuge far from the settlers. Led by a Mohawk preacher named Eleazar Williams, most of the Oneidas left their homelands beginning in 1820 for territory among the Menominee Nation in eastern Wisconsin. This group was primarily Christian, while another so-called pagan faction elected to form a community on the Thames River near London, Ontario. Another group chose to live on the Onondaga Reservation south of Syracuse, while a fourth, the Marble Hill Oneidas, refused to leave and held on to their few acres outside of Sherrill, New York. Throughout the 19th century, the Oneida lands in New York were gradually whittled away by New York in violation of federal law. Although the Oneidas complained vigorously, not until 1985 would the merits of their case be upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. During those dark years, the ideas of the Oneidas returning home to live on an expanded land area was kept alive by a few individuals. In the 20th century, patriots such as Mary Winder and her sister Delia Waterman filed numerous petitions to the U.S. government to seek justice for their cause. While Mary Winder died in 1952, her sister continued to press the government. In 1972, the Oneidas remaining in New York filed legal action in the U.S. courts before finally prevailing 13 years later. With the arrival of commercial gambling in Indian country in the late 1970s, the Oneidas sought to create an economic base by opening a small bingo hall, which was later expanded. Throughout the 1980s, however, intense internal struggles for control of the Oneidas resulted in violent clashes, recriminations, and arson. In 1977, the Grand Council of the Haudenosaunee acknowledged three individuals, Lyman Johns, Richard Christian, and Arthur Raymond Halbritter, as messengers for the Oneida people residing in central New York. With the deaths of Johns and Christian, Halbritter assumed unilateral powers and created an organization called the Men's Council, a decision made without the approval of the Oneida people and condemned by the Grand Council. In April 1993, Halbritter concluded secret negotiations with New York Governor Mario Cuomo, resulting in a gaming compact to open a casino on disputed territory. The Grand Council of the Haudenosaunee stripped Halbritter of his status as an Oneida spokesperson, which then ratified by the U.S. Department of the Interior on August 10, then rescinded a day later after the intervention of U.S. Representative Sharon Berhalot, Republican from New York, a sponsor of Halbritter and a gambling advocate. Halbritter moved to create a 54-member, completely non-native police force to consolidate his power on Oneida territory. Using U.S. government funds, Halbritter built a housing project and offered expanded social services to gain support. in August 1993, the Turning Stone Casino opened to quickly become the largest single employer in Oneida County. The Halperin regime refused to comply with the 1988 Indian Gaming Act by supplying the National Indian Gaming Commission with audits from 1993 to 1996. Not until the commission threatened to close the casino did the Halperin regime acquiesce and submit a report, yet despite efforts by the Oneidas to obtain a financial accounting of the casino operations, they have yet, as of May 1999, to see such a document. On March 20, 1995, the Wolf Clan members of the United Nations gathered to meet at their longhouse to find the locks had been changed. The non-native police officers were instructed to arrest anyone trying to enter. They moved the meeting to the Wolf Clan mother's log cabin, my friend Macy Shenandoah, where the Wolf Clan members decided to remove Ray Halperin as their representative due to the numerous injustices done against the Oneida people. The Halperin regime responded by stripping the, quote, dissidents, unquote, of their status as Oneidas, resulting in a loss of employment, health insurance, educational allowances, quarterly stipends, and all other Oneida Nation services. In 1996, the traditional Oneidas, or the Onyontaka'aka, initiated suit in U.S. federal court to have Halperin deemed a U.S. citizen removed as Oneida representative. The complaint was dismissed at the district level, but appealed at the Second Circuit, which found sufficient evidence to order a hearing in the U.S. Department of the Interior to determine Halperin's status. The federal court dismissed his case without prejudice, and now it is up to the people to exhaust all remedies. This is impossible due to the structure of the current leadership.
I never we are never, no, I won't.
a beautiful traditional Haudenosaunee song from Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah. Now I urge our listeners to get your pen and paper out because I want to provide the contact information for this very fine organization, Oneidas for Democracy, and urge our listeners to help support them in different ways. You can write to this Oneidas for Democracy at Onyota Aka, People of the Standing Stone, P.O. Box 450, Oneida, New York, 13421, USA. Once again, that is Oneidas for Democracy, Onyota Aka, that's capital O-N-Y-O-T-A-K-A, People of the Standing Stone, P.O. Box 450, Oneida, New York, 13421, USA. For those of you with computer access, their email is info@oneidasfordemocracy.org. That's info@oneidasfordemocracy.org. And they have a very fine website, which is www.oneidasfordemocracy.org. And I'm going to read from one of their narratives on the website some background on their organization, Oneidas for Democracy. This is entitled Onyota Aka, People of the Standing Stone. The Oneidas for Democracy are the Oneida people who peacefully uphold the traditional values of the Haudenosaunee Iroquois Confederacy. The Onyota Aka, People of the Standing Stone, have endured many hardships over the past few generations as they have struggled to maintain their status as Haudenosaunee. They have overcome great odds to return to their ancestral lands. Their inherent right to live in peace within Oneida territory is rapidly being stripped away from them by the current leadership of the Oneida Nation of New York, Incorporated. Pictured above is Mary Cornelis Winder, a picture taken around 1916, who worked tirelessly on behalf of the Oneida people so they would one day be united. Presently, Oneida people reside in New York, Wisconsin, and Canada. It was her dream a homeland for all Oneida people would become a reality. It was because of Mary and her sister, Delia Waterman's efforts, a land claim was begun. Sadly, their efforts have been thwarted due to the lust for money and control over our ancestral territory by a few misguided Oneidas. Against the wishes of the Confederacy, and without knowledge of the Oneida people, a casino deal was struck between ex-Governor Cuomo and so-called Oneida Chief Executive Officer Arthur Raymond Halbritter in 1993. The compact was never ratified by the Oneidas. Using money borrowed by Halbritter from the Key Bank of Central New York, the Chief Executive Officer mortgaged Oneida land without our knowledge. The Turning Stone Casino was built in Oneida, New York. The casino was built on wetlands in violation of both U.S. and Haudenosaunee laws. Because Halbritter violated Haudenosaunee rules, he was removed from his position as an Oneida spokesperson in May 1993, a decision acknowledged by the U.S. government only to be rescinded by the Bureau of Indian Affairs at the request of U.S. Congressman Representative Sherwood Bohert, who feared a change in Oneida leadership would place the casino in peril. The Oneida people were completely unaware that any transactions for land, a casino, or lawsuits against 20,000 landowners would ensue. To date, the Oneida people who have opposed these decisions continue to be threatened with ongoing human, civil, and religious rights violations and are in present danger of losing their homes on the Oneida Indian Territory. Under the guise of a beautification program, the leadership has authorized a mock tribal court system to prosecute all those who stand up for their rights as Haudenosaunee. A 54-man, completely non-native, Oneida Nation police force acting on the direct orders of Hal Britter, has harassed, intimidated, and physically assaulted Oneida people on their own territory. A tree of peace was planted on the territory in June of 2000 by Mohawk Nation Chief Jake Swamp at the Oneida Territory to encourage peace and reconciliation. On August 8, 2001, by direct orders from the Chief Executive Officer, the non-native contractor uprooted the Tree of Peace and cast it aside. Despite this provocation, the United People continue to embrace peace, advocate for a return to traditional democracy, and call for unity among the United People. Because the Oneidas have sought to restore and protect their ancestral freedoms on their homelands, they have endured human, civil, and religious rights, personal property illegally confiscated, suspension of their Oneida membership, no housing benefits, rejection of heating assistance, ongoing police abuses, arrests, and harassment, including 24-hour surveillance, likely evictions from the 32-acre territory, denial of education benefits, subverting of due process in the so-called Oneida Court. Well, dear friends, we're nearly out of time for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio on Radio for Peace International. I want to thank you for listening to Global Community Radio. And I want to also encourage our listeners to please contact the people of the Standing Stone to find out more about their struggle. They have produced an excellent video entitled Voices of the United People, which summarizes many of their concerns. That is available for $15 plus $5 posted shipping from Oñoitaaka, People of Standing Stone, P.O. Box 450, Oneida, New York, 13421, USA. And again, if you have any spare change around, our friends can always use some financial support to keep their struggle going. Just some food supplies, and of course keeping an office going takes a lot of money these days. So again, please contact the people of the Standing Stone and check out their website, www.onidasfordemocracy.org, and they give a listing of a lot of other ways in which you can help out. We're going to leave you with another song from Joanne Shenandoah, another fine traditional Haudenosaunee music. Until the next Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, this is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwasin, to all of our relations. Yane, we know, yane. Moccasin. You are listening to the American Indian Movement's Honoring Song. This is Wolf Mountain Press, a documentary program focusing on Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Wolf Mountain Press will present the situations facing Indian peoples throughout the world with Native music, poetry, news, and Indian case histories and the struggle to protect Mother Earth and the sacred ways of life of Native peoples.